and a small suckling pig was exactly what one could use for dinner. Right there ahead of him, clear in the afternoon light, was a compact herd of pigs out in the open. There were big ones and small ones, but they were all fat. Johnny pulled Windsplitter to a halt and slid off. The wind was not quite right, a bit too downwind to the pigs. They'd smell him if he approached directly. With a bent-knee run, he brought himself silently around them until the wind was at right angles. He stopped and hefted his club. The tall grass was nearly to his waist. The pigs were rooting around a shallow depression in the plain, where waters stood in the wet months, making a temporary marsh. There must be roots to be had there, Johnny supposed. There were dozens of pigs, every one with his snout down. With a crouching gait, staying below the grass tops, Johnny went forward, closing the distance yard by yard. Only a few feet separated him now from the outermost fringe of pigs. Silently, he rose until his eyes were just above the level of the grass. A small porker was only 3 arm spans from him, an easy throw. "Here's for supper," breathed Johnny, and heaved his kill club straight and true at the head of the pig. Dead on, a direct hit. The pig let out an ear splitter and dropped. But that wasn't all that happened. Instant confusion roared. Hidden from Johnny by the tall grass and slightly behind him and to his right, a 500-pound boar who had become tired of eating had lain down for a nap. The squeal of the hit pig acted like a whip on the whole herd, and away they went in an instant charge, straight upwind at Johnny's horses. For the big boar, to see was to charge. Johnny felt like he had been struck by a mountain avalanche. He was knocked flat and squashed, in instants so close together they felt like one. He rolled. But the whole sky over him was filled with boar belly. He didn't see, but he sensed the teeth and tusks trying to find him. He rolled again, the savage squeals mixing with the roaring pound of the blood in his ears. Once more he rolled, and this time he saw daylight and a back. In the blink of an eye, he was on the boar's back. He reached an arm across the throat. The boar spun around and around like a bucking horse. Johnny's arm tightened until he could feel his sinews crack. And then the boar, strangled, dropped into a limp, jerking pile. Johnny unloaded quickly and backed up. The boar was gasping its breath back. It lurched to unsteady feet and, seeing no opponent, staggered off. Johnny went over and picked up the small pig, keeping an eye on the departing boar. But the boar, although it cast about and made small convulsive charges, still couldn't see anybody, and after a bit it trotted in the direction the herd had taken, following the trampled grass. There was no herd in sight. And there were no horses. No horses. Johnny stood there with the dead pig. He had no sharp rock to cut it. He had no flints to start a fire and roast it. And he had no horses. It might be worse. He looked at his legs, expecting to see tusk gashes, but he found none. His back and face ached a bit from the collision of the charge and his own collision with the ground, but that was all. Mentally kicking himself, more ashamed than scared, he made off in the direction of the trail of crushed grass. After a while, his depression wore off a bit, to be replaced by optimism. He began to whistle a call. The horses would not have just gone on running in front of the pigs. They would have veered off somewhere. Just as darkness was falling, he spotted Windsplitter calmly cropping grass. The horse looked up with a, "Where have you been?" and then, with a plainly mischievous grin, as though he had intended to all the time, came over and bumped Johnny with his muzzle. It took another 10 minutes of anxious casting about to locate the lead horse in the packs. Johnny went back a short way to a little spring they'd passed and made camp. There he made himself a belt and a pouch, and into the latter he put tinder and a flint and some small sharp-edged stones. He put a stronger thong on the big kill club and fastened it to the belt. He wasn't going to be caught empty-handed a second time in this vast prairie. No, indeed. That night he dreamed of Chrissy being strangled by pigs, Chrissy mauled by bears, Chrissy crushed to a pulp under stampeding hoofs, while he stood helpless in the sky where the spirits go, unable to do a damned thing. 8. The great village where thousands had lived was obviously another one of those myths, like monsters. But he would look for it nonetheless. By the half-light of the yellowing dawn, Johnny was again trotting eastward. The plain was changing. There were some features about it that didn't seem usual, such as those mounds. Johnny detoured from his way into the sun to look at one of them. He stopped, leaning forward with a hand braced on Windsplitter's shoulder to study the place. It was a little sort of hill, but it had a hole in the side, a rectangular hole. Otherwise, the mound was all covered with dirt and grass. Some freak of nature? A window opening? He slid off his horse and approached it. He walked around it. Then he paced it out. It was about 35 paces long and 10 paces wide. Ha! Maybe the mound was rectangular, too. An old splintered stump stood to one side, and Johnny appropriated a jagged piece of it. He approached the window and, using the scrap of wood, began to push away the grass edges. It surprised him that he seemed to be digging not in earth, but in loose sand. When he got the lower part of the rectangle cleared, he could get right up to it and look into it. The mound was hollow. He backed up and looked at his horses and then around at the countryside. There wasn't anything menacing there. He bent over and started to crawl into the mound. And the window bit him. He straightened right up and looked at his wrist. It was bleeding. It wasn't a bad cut. It was that he was cut at all that startled him. Very carefully he looked at the window. It had teeth. Well, maybe they weren't teeth. They were dull bright and had a lot of colors in them, and they stood all around the outside edges of the frame. He pulled one of them out. They were very loose. He took a bit of thong from his belt and tried it. Wonder of wonders! The tooth readily cut the thong, far better than the best rock edge. Hey, he thought, delighted, look what I got. And with the greatest care, for the things did bite unless you were careful, he removed the splinters, big and small, from the frame and stacked them neatly. He went to his pack and got a piece of buckskin and wrapped them up. Valuable. You could cut and skin and scrape something wonderful with these things. Some kind of rock. Or this mound was the skull of some strange beast, and these were the remains of its teeth. Wonderful. When he had them all and they were carefully stowed in his pack, except one nice bit he put in his belt pouch, he returned to the task of entering the mound. There was nothing to bite him now, and he climbed through the rectangle. There wasn't any pit. The level of the inside seemed to be a bit higher than the outside ground. A sudden flurry startled him half out of his wits, but it was just a bird that had a nest in here, and it left through the window with a rustle of wings. Once outside, it found a place to sit and began to scold and scold. Johnny fumbled his way through the dimness. There wasn't much there, mainly rust, but there had been things here. He could tell from the rust piles and wall marks. Walls? Yes, the place had walls. They were of some sort of rough stone or something, very evenly fitted together in big square blocks. Yes, these were walls. No animal made anything like this. And no animal made anything like this tray. It must have been part of something else, now turned to reddish powder. At the bottom of the powder were some circular discs about as big as 3 thumbnails. And at the bottom of the pile of discs was one that was almost bright. Johnny picked it up and turned it over. He caught his breath. He moved over to the window where there was better light. There could be no mistake. It was the big bird with spread wings and arrows gripped in its claws. The same sign he had found in the tomb. He stood in quivering excitement for a bit, and then calmed down. He had it now. The mystery was solved. and he went back out the window and showed Windsplitter. "Godhouse," said Johnny. "This is where they stayed while waiting to take great men up to the tomb. Pretty, isn't it?" Windsplitter finished chewing a mouthful of grass and gave Johnny a shove in the chest. It was time they were going. Johnny put the disc in his belt pouch. Well, it was no great village, but it proved definitely that there were things to find out here in the plains. Walls. Imagine that. Those gods could build walls. The bird stopped scolding in some relief as Johnny mounted up and moved away. It looked after the little cavalcade and then, with a couple more criticisms, went back inside the ancient ruin.